Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
From Spiritual Connections Radio, and I'd like to welcome you to another great evening of the show. As you know, we normally do a show every Thursday night, but we're bringing you this special show that actually is going to air on Saturday night during our primetime slot, and we're doing that because we're actually recording with somebody who is on the other side of the planet. So we're really excited to have our guests on this evening. And with that, let me just announce that you are listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. If you want to find out more about this show, you can go to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. As this is a recording, we will not be taking any callers, so no need to call in this time. And this show will be available in the replays after it airs on Saturday. So thank you for joining us again. And with that, I'm going to bring in my host, Pam. Are you there?
Hi, Mark. Yes, I'm honored to be here tonight.
Yeah, so we were just kind of talking about before the show that I'm way up in Pennsylvania where it's actually really cold, and you're actually down in Florida where it's probably about 80.
No, it was 87 today.
Yeah. I actually had to turn on the heat for the first time today, so it's been kind of interesting here.
I grew up in Pennsylvania, so I'm pretty clear on those cold evenings.
Well, I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce our guests, and we'll bring them on the air.
All right. Well, tonight it appears that we have a very special guest. I haven't got a chance to talk for myself because we had a snag on the call-ins right before the show, and we couldn't hear her. So she could hear us, but we couldn't hear her. So we finally straightened it out. And so I know about as much about her as you do at this point. I do know that her name is Jessica Schaub, and she is from Vancouver, Canada. And Jessica, I believe, is the co-owner or co-founder, rather, of EOF Project, and we'll find out about that in a few minutes. She's got 7 years of experience as an inspirational speaker, writer, mentor, and life coach. So with that, we'll go ahead and introduce Jessica Schaub. Are you there?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Jessica?
Thank you for having me. Hi, can you hear me?
Yep, I hear you now.
Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah, we can actually hear you, yeah.
Good, okay. It's not always reliable in Bali, Indonesia.
Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful place to live. Are you living there or are you just vacationing there?
Yes, I'm living here. I'm actually also here with Diego Krychek Fontaneve, the founder of EOF as well.
Oh, good. I didn't hear his voice when he came on, so I wondered if he needed an introduction. This is Diego Krychek Fontaneve. Is that how you pronounce his last name? He's
Diego
Krychek Fontaneve.
Yes,
okay.
Correct.
He's a revolutionary visionary and the founder of the EOF Project as well. Diego, thanks for joining us tonight, too.
Hello. Hi. Pleasure.
Hi.
And if I remember correctly, Diego is actually from Venice, Italy.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, I am.
So he's got
excellent,
a thick accent.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for being on with us this evening. It's evening for us. I guess it's morning for you. You're about 12 hours ahead of us.
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
You live in the future. You guys live in the past. anyway, so I was surprised that you guys asked us to be on your show. So I was wondering if you guys could elaborate a bit more about what made you guys so compelled to have us on the show, seeing some of the EOS stuff is quite shocking for a lot of people who are considered spiritual nowadays.
What does EOS mean? Can you tell me? I'm sorry, Mark. I just wanted to know what the EOS project actually meant. What does EOS stand for?
It stands for the end of fear.
End of fear. That's great. Okay, Mark, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Yeah, so I originally found Diego and Jessica when I was doing my research and looking at a number of the different spiritual projects that are out there, such as Project Camelot. And I also follow a lot of what's called the Juicy Living Tour. And came across a lot of Diego and Jessica's work and was looking at, of course, all the videos and stuff like that, and that led me to the website. And, I think to answer your question, Jessica, what I thought was really interesting about it is that, you know, I spend a lot of time going out and finding two what I would call flavors of people that I bring on the show. I find people out there that are really world-renowned, you know, as far as other people would consider to be spiritual teachers, authors, experts in their specific field or whatever they're good at. It could be relationships. It could be, you know, whatever it is. And then I will go and I'll find someone who basically what most people would consider an unknown, and that's someone out in the spiritual field that is kind of working on some new developments, who is creating new things, who are bringing something new to the world that just, you know, they don't have a book published or they're not really known too well. And I bring them into the arena also to kind of give them a voice and have them bring the light into it. So I think what really excited me about both you and Diego's work is the fact that you do kind of have this different mentality of not really just going along with the norm or what people would consider to be the norm. And you really just kind of are out there just bringing a different perspective. And I think what's one of the things that's really important about Spiritual Connections Radio is that we really do want to have those alternate perspectives. And is it okay if I share a little bit of your email with the audience, Jessica?
Sure.
It was really funny. Jessica actually wrote to me when I reached out to her. I kind of giggle about this because it was kind of funny. And she goes, you have gone to my website and you have read my blog, correct? And I was like, yes, I have. And she's like, oh, okay, just want to make sure you understand, you know, and stuff like that. And, you know, what I wanted to let Jessica and Diego know is that we really wanted their opinion. We're not really looking for them to give a different opinion or anything like that. So I think the way we left it is, well, let's go ahead and talk about what most people would consider to be taboo topics and everything else. So that's basically it. Did I answer your question, Jessica?
Yes, you did. So the EOS stands for the end of fear. And when we mean fear, we don't mean the natural fears, like you see a tiger and you run. It's more about the psychological fears. It's more about the things that we are hiding and lying to ourselves about. For example, you saw me in Project Camelot and the Juicy Living Tour with Lilu Mace, and I was a spiritual speaker, but I cannot call myself that anymore because I don't feel comfortable with it anymore, seeing how in some ways it helps to actually cover up the root issue. Just, you know, be positive and say everything's going to be okay. Well, the reality is there's a lot going on in this world that we have to face honestly. We can't just send love and light and expect it to be okay. And I was very sick of working with people, helping them after the damage had been done. I was more really curious about damage prevention. I mean, what exactly is going on in our psyche, if it's all within, that is creating all this chaos externally in the world as well? What else are we missing? And that's really what opened me more to the EOF and embraced it to want to share it so much with the world, even though I've actually lost a lot of my followers because of it, because it is so, I guess, not what they would expect from me, shocking to question everything in this way. And I will have Diego share some things also about the project as well.
Okay.
Hey, Diego, before you get into that, I'd be really interested, because I watched the two of you on a lot of the YouTube videos, and I just love the way the two of you work together. And it's funny, because I think at a certain point, Jessica, you actually came under attack from a lot of your fans who basically felt that you were this, servant woman who just basically sits back. And, you know, you kind of cleared it up in one of the YouTube videos where you were like, no, there's times when, you know, I will speak and Diego will step back and knows that I need my space to kind of allow whatever needs to happen during these filmings. And the same thing about kind of giving that kind of holding of space back to the other person too.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of tricky when you're speaking with another person because I know how it feels for me. You only have so much time. And it comes to you, and then if you get interrupted, you forget, and, you know, it's like a matter of being able to read each other and be able to bounce off and let the person be able to share. I always think, though, because people have heard me talk for so long, and Diego is kind of new to my audience and just to getting out there, I thought, okay, I'll let him share more.
Okay, well, I definitely want to hear Diego kind of talk about what he was going to go into. But before we do that, I'd love to either hear from either one of you on where did the two of you meet and how did your work come together?
You want to take it?
Okay. First of all, I want to apologize for my English in my videos, that many of my videos have been created long ago, maybe even 2 years ago, when my English was a kind of mess. So,
and the recent ones you did too.
I say sorry for my English, my video, especially my seven-hour documentary with the English is a total, it's understandable, but it's a total mess.
I'm not sure if we saw that one.
Anyway, the concept is important. So I want to say something. Before talking about the radical concept of the End of Fear project itself, which is quite difficult to be understood to the many, we have to point out the fact that what we are doing is what they call the prequel, like in a movie. So the whole spiritual searching, whatever spiritual means, seems to be like a sequel of life, the life we are doing, right? It's a searching for something that is supposed to come, it's supposed to be manifest in some way, maybe through some practices, maybe by following some gurus, some spiritual leaders, some spiritual preachers, whatever. So it is clearly a projection and a protraction toward a possible future, and there is nothing wrong in that. A possible future in which the mess of mankind can be a bit less a mess and a bit more productive, a future of peace and understanding. So this is the way how the benevolent way how I see the whole spiritual searching, whatever it is. What we do is the prequel. What we do is the prequel.
And we met here in Bali, Indonesia, a year ago.
What we mean by the prequel, exactly? By the prequel, we mean what comes first of this searching? What is at the bottom of this searching? So the energy of process is internally projected in that. What comes first, before the searching of something? it can be searching for a political solution, can be searching for setting up an eco-community, whatever it is, the spiritual searching, whatever it is. So what comes first, exactly? We face the fact that the world, the spiritual searching, exists and takes place because there is suffering, there is confusion. All right?
Right.
Okay. Let me move up. Maybe we move up. Sorry, we are in a restaurant. We have some people here and want a bit more privacy. Maybe we move up the second floor just 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay.
I'll try it.
Hey, Diego, the English is sounding fine to me, but I'm not actually hearing both of you too well. If you could just speak a little bit louder into the phone or the speakerphone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just one moment.
Okay, sorry. Also, to answer the question, we did meet in Bali, Indonesia, about a year ago. Are you able to hear me?
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's definitely better. Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, that's better.
Okay, well, that's good. We moved upstairs, and I have the mic right by me. And, okay, interesting. Okay, and this is good, too?
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Okay, continue where we left off.
Very sorry for the interruption. We are in a restaurant, actually, because the connection is faster. It's the only way to have
have you guys hear us?
To get a clear connection, I hope. So you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, it's much better.
Okay. So I was saying that the whole End of Year project is entirely focused in the beginning, what they call the prequel, what happened before the searching for something. Can be the searching for a spiritual solution, can be the searching for setting up organization to solve some problems in our society, can be the searching for a better understanding of the human mind. But the fact is that where there is a searching that is totally understandable, especially nowadays that we are living in a world, in a human world, in which if we look at the curve of depression, for example, or mental illness, or in general psychological discomfort is increasing in a extremely rapid way, especially the last 5 years, and not just because of the financial crisis, because of many other reasons, the pressure and whatever.
But that's also the increase of spirituality, the interest in that spirituality as well.
The interesting scenario is that if we compare the graphically the increasing of the searching for a spiritual solution whatsoever, whatever it is, and we compare this curve that goes up with the same curve of depression and psychological discomfort, it's almost shocking to realize that the curve, even graphically, it is exactly the same. So there is clearly a connection between the searching for spirituality, or perhaps the searching for conspiracy theories and all these things, and the increasing of depression, discomfort, psychological discomfort in the mind of people. So the problem comes when people get more and more, or even totally, entirely involved and focused in the spiritual searching only, in the spiritual keys, in the spiritual blogs, in the spiritual books, in the thousands of spiritual preachers that now are emerging from the web like mushrooms. For some people, it's like actually, it's like being honest. It's like a kind of a new job. Recently, I found, just to make some fun, I found a website called How to Become a Spiritual Guru on the Web. That actually is funny, but it's not that funny. This website is suggesting, actually, if I remember well, 10 major tips in order to become a spiritual preacher in the web. For example, I was very disturbed by reading one of these tips that actually was suggesting something like, if someone asks you something like to be more, to clarify, if someone asks you a definition about what you mean by that, what you mean by quantum consciousness, what you mean by spiritual connection, you are supposed to avoid, if you can, the answer, or perhaps you are supposed to write something a little bit misty in order to turn around without actually being precise. And this is exactly the point, that we are not attacking the spiritual searching, not at all. That many people perceive as like an opposition, an attack, or other people say that we are evil, that we are Illuminati, that we are all these things. But in any case, what we are trying to activate is the possibility for one person, especially when that person search for something existentially, to find out for himself or for herself.
To get them to think and ask, why am I really searching? Why is this really so important?
So is there a possibility not to be a teacher or a guru or a master, whatever, not to be a motivational speaker giving suggestions and tips, but to co-work together with no guru, no master, no channeling, no spiritual preaching of any kind, together, and try to find out for ourselves together, like a co-working. Not a constant disposition teacher and followers, because the follower, it doesn't matter if it's positive or negative, it doesn't really matter. The follower, I'm sorry, it doesn't matter if the follower follows fake stuff or real stuff. The follower remains a follower. The total thinker, the possibility to think with the totality of the mind is not there when the mind searches for something. And what I mean by that?
Snap out of the following spell so that we can think profoundly about what we're following and what we're doing.
I like so much this psychological technology aimed to ask constantly, what do you mean by that? I mean this. Okay, what do you mean by that? I mean this. Okay, what do you mean by that? To go, in order to go deeper and deeper and deeper, at the very bottom of the creation of the process of thinking, trying to find out the possibility to think with no conditionings at all.
Even little kids, when they're like, why? Well, why? 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 It just did it. Just because I said so.
A follower is barely ruled by the intellectual mind. What I mean by that? Even during the spiritual searching, it can be by reading books, can be by watching a video, can be by making a mantra, the desire of doing some meditation, following some a certain psychological posture and physical posture, breathing in a certain, all of these things, they all come from a psychological need, that need is entirely intellectual. It seems to be a total paradox, because we are talking about spirituality, supposed to be something far beyond the intellectual mind, but unfortunately, it remains 100% intellectual.
Diego, can I interrupt you for just a second? Because I'd like to clarify a few things.
Sure.
The first thing is, it seems very clearly, if I could sum up what you just said in my own words, it's actually something that I teach myself. When I begin any sort of seminar or workshop, I always say this, that if you give me your power, if you believe everything I say, then I will be the master and you will be the perpetual student. You have to be the one that knows. And all of the things that we do is a reminder of what you know and not something that I'm this guru and you're the one that doesn't know. Because assuming one position of power forces the other person, in this case the student, into the opposite polarity. Is that what you're saying?
I agree, actually. Anyone who gives us silently, directly or indirectly, or clearly, or in a misty way, a belief system or a path in life, is giving us, actually, voluntarily or not, a structure in order to encapsulate our possibility to think free. So it doesn't matter if someone is giving me an idea of living, a spiritual key. It is giving me a condition which encapsulates my psyche in an act of searching. For example, if I join a spiritual retreat whatsoever, and the spiritual retreat is about enlightenment, the person that is there, or the people that are there, or the teachers, or whoever they are going to teach me a way to imprison my mind in a belief system, in a dogma. Doesn't matter if it's positive or negative, or if there can be some kind of placebo effect. I mean, we need to clarify the fact that...
I understand
again,
what you're saying, and I agree with you. I do agree with you. But let's look at it just because it's a radio show and we're trying to look at all angles. Let me play the devil's advocate for a minute. My belief, from dealing with people for years and years and years, is simply that people love to give their power away. People love to have a guru. They love to have a master. That's why the Jesus virus is so predominant in the Western culture. It's because... And I don't mean Jesus himself. I mean the virus of people giving their power to something outside of themselves. So, you know, so-and-so knows better than I do. So-and-so has power and decides for me. And this guru knows all the answers, so I have to hang around him or her so that I know I can reach enlightenment or the state of spiritual ecstasy or whatever it is that you're going for. So... I completely understand that. But don't you think it's also true that it's an inherent part of humanity that I'm always arguing against? Don't give me your power. You already know. But people love to do that. They don't want to take responsibility for themselves. It's too scary. This culture breeds it. This culture breeds this concept of the government will take care of you. Your parents will take care of you. Everybody will take care of you, and now you have Jesus to take care of you, or your guru would take care of you, and nobody stands up for themselves. You know, I've had this issue for years, and this is a big, one of the major, I think the major issues in my teaching that I can't seem to get over because people in general don't want to take responsibility for themselves. What do you think about that?
So what we are doing actually is we are working exactly that. Why exactly people so scared, so afraid, so preoccupied when we suggest to them to find out for themselves, of course within a co-working, within a co-suggesting, but to find out for yourself without any labels, including spirituality.
And to understand our internal Stockholm syndrome complex.
I didn't get that, Jessica. Would you say it again?
I said, and to understand our internal Stockholm complex. Stockholm Syndrome complex that we do to ourselves inside, that we constantly sabotage ourselves.
You know what is the Stockholm Syndrome?
No, I'm the, no, I'm listening.
Okay, I'm sorry. It's something that I try to explain in a short way. Something that happened in Sweden long ago, probably 50 years ago, actually. There were some terrorists or something like that, I cannot remember really well, that they took some, they kidnapped some people, and then everything actually was okay. These people went to the prison, but something mysterious happened in the mind of the prisoners, because some of the prisoners began to visit those people, those criminals in the prison, giving them gifts, flowers, letters, and so on. So there is something weird in the human mind, that when there is too much pressure or too much confusion, discomfort, and even violence, there is a weird, very interesting activation of a need to, in some way unconsciously, to say thank to the jailer.
Loving and nurturing our repressors. And that's how we end up in abusive situations. So I just need to be more loving and positive. Oh, they're not that bad, kind of a thing. And then also this that we do to ourselves internally all the time, nurturing the limiting thoughts and so forth.
So this is actually very interesting. My question is, in the world of spiritual searching, what is the amount of people that are actually delegating their psychological and even physical energies to the spiritual searching as a gift they are giving to their fear and discomfort and confusion? So we want to understand this, because otherwise we are going to give people just a label and label and label. It doesn't matter if we talk with them in this way. I spent the years of my life talking with people in this way, and many of them, I'm sorry, I have to say most of them, they keep asking me a kind of spiritual key or something, even without mentioning the word spirituality, but the need, the pulsation, the addiction is again the spiritual. They search again for a guru, for a purpose,
which is always guilt is behind that.
The fact is that we have to be a bit more profound now. First of all, we have to understand why mankind is seeking for a meaning in life. Whatever it is, spiritual or existential or whatever, why are we searching for a meaning in life? And the reason is to be found in the fact that the technical human thought in terms of language can be complete. Like, I have to learn how to use my computer. So I learn, and then I will be able perhaps to use my computer. This is a technical action that requires language and understanding and learning of something. But when it comes to think existentially, who am I? Where am I from? Where am I going? And why am I here? This existential process of thinking is never complete. It cannot be complete. It cannot be terminated. It cannot be finished. Because the moment we finish it to a level, like God, the heaven, the enlightenment, the fifth dimension, whatever it is, we actually prevent the evolution of our intelligence. Our intelligence is evolving. It's evolving, and by feeding, nourishing this need to conclude the thought, the existential thought, we actually stop evolution of the psyche. And that's exactly the reason why. If we inquire in the human history, which is merely not exactly the history of love and understanding, but the history, it is the history of confusion, disaster, belief systems, separation, disconnection.
Suffering, war.
We have a fascinating progress in terms of technology. Now we have Singapore, we have the iPad, we can fly, we can go to the space. But the progress of the mind is always there. Nothing changed. The same disconnection,
okay.
The same conflict. You see, sorry, I want to conclude this. We say we are all
okay,
one.
Please.
We don't know. We do not know what we mean by that, because then we say at the same time we say we have to respect all belief systems. You are Muslim, I should respect you. But simultaneously, we are all one. It's the antithesis of what we say in itself. Okay, I'm sorry. Please. You
hear
me? Okay. You wanted
yep.
to say something?
I missed the last part of that sentence, though. Could you repeat the last sentence?
Because of the connection?
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was saying, what actually you missed?
I'm sorry, we're all one.
Ah, yeah, the last part, okay. I was sharing the fact that it's a little bit funny when people say sometimes...
But not.
As a mantra.
We're all one.
We are all one.
Right.
And simultaneously, right. at the same time, they say we have to respect all belief systems. Or people that say, in the New Age scenario, they say all paths are valid, including the Hitler path, the Inquisition path, and many other paths.
Forced to wear a burqa, otherwise you get beaten.
So where there is a belief system that is governing, ruling the mind, there is violence. It doesn't matter if the belief system is positive or not. When my belief system is think positive, the paradox is that actually I'm feeding disconnection, violence, because I'm following something and then I'm acting because of that something. The thinker is not there. The full thinker, what is supposed to be toward the psychological evolution and a better society and with no longer disconnection, I'm not talking about a single mind, not at all, this is simply sick. A world in which each individuality has no beliefs of any kind, not the new world spiritual order, that it seems to me that is what we are facing right now. We are facing some people actually mixing together parts of the different religions, like the karma, the cosmic Christ, all of these things, putting them together, creating a single new age kind of religiosity, not really religion, but religiosity in the world. And this is extremely dangerous. I mean, by talking personally,
it ceases to be a new way of thinking and begins to be a doctrine. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
It's like going to school and saying, kids, no need to study or think, but all the answers on the quiz is God or, this kind of thing like that.
It's understandable that.
It takes me back to the same question in terms of mass consciousness or group consciousness. When you put belief in the hands of humanity, what happens to that belief? Because of who we are, what happens to that belief is, number one, it becomes an us. Those of us that believe this, against them, the ones that don't, which turns it into a religion and a doctrine, whether you choose that in the beginning or not. So, what I'm saying is you cannot separate what you're saying from the fact that humanity in itself does this over and over again and has since the beginning of time. And the concept of meaning, which you were talking about earlier, this concept of meaning, what we do is we're storytellers. We have these experiences, we tell ourselves stories, and those stories eventually translate into meaning, and that's the meaning that we give ourselves in our life. And if you want someone to believe something, you tell them stories about the meaning of life. And so I understand that you're saying that people take advantage of this and have turned it into a doctrine and then therefore are hurting people. Do you have an answer?
Okay. The answer to this question is, to me, kind of simple. And the answer is another question. Is there a possibility to think fully without any idea and belief system, which means can we think at our thoughts without the thought that creates that thought? Can we think at our very our process of thinking without the thoughts that create that process of thinking? And it's not just a linguistic game or a philosophical game. It can be absolutely practical. So what do we mean by that? We have to do a step back for a moment, and we have to realize a very powerful and profound and unfortunately sad and dramatic realization. And the realization is that we are not thinking. We, as human beings, are not thinking. What I mean by that? I mean, we are not thinking. We are merely picking up models of thinking from somewhere else, from what we have been told, from what we read, from our friends, our family, society, mass media, books, whatever. It doesn't matter if my process of thinking is that I want to become a businessman making a lot of money and a lot of power, or if my process of thinking is aiming to become a priest or to become a spiritual person, to become more conscious. We have to realize the first main realization before taking any action and before desiring something that we are not thinking. We are picking up psychologically models of thinking according with our personality, affinities, background. If I grow up in India, I will pick up most likely models of thinking according with the Indian religiosity. If I grow up in Russia, I will be something else. Only three boats 500 years ago were sufficient to establish a belief in two continents, and now people are picking up, I'm talking in general, of course, not all of them, but the large majority of people is not thinking, is picking up. What I mean exactly by that? What I mean, because I have to clarify what I mean, otherwise it's just my opinion. So the human mind, in order to work properly, to think properly, requires psychological security, right? We need the psychological security, otherwise we cannot think. So we need a psychological security, which is our comfort zone. It can be in simple needs, like my house, my family, my dog, or can be in making a lot of money, or it can be in spiritual ambitions, or it can be by praying my God. It doesn't really matter. So the mind needs psychological security in order to work properly. And the only field where mind can go in order to pick up the tools the mind needs to establish that psychological security is the field of the known, what we know. The mind cannot go in the future to pick up the tools to establish psychological security. The mind can only go in the past. The past, you know, what we know, the known field.
Well, it is true because we're pattern association makers, and you can't know what you have no pattern of. In other words, there's a story, and I don't know how true it is, but it's probably true. From my belief system, it's probably true, where Columbus got to the Indian Ocean, or he arrived on the edge of, I think it was Mexico, and they couldn't see the ships because there was absolutely no pattern there. They had nothing to associate it with, so they just couldn't see them. And that's how we even perceive third dimensional reality, because this is what we know. This is what our conditioning is. So how do you know something that you have no pattern of?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Jessica a question if that's okay. Jessica,
yes, sure.
You know, since you've kind of gone through this process, we know you kind of came from drinking the lemonade to kind of going through this transformation and going into this world of working with Diego. Can you talk about this transformation for you, and, you know, from the fact that you came from a foundation of spirituality and what it means to you as far as your own development and your reality now?
It was very shocking and intense. And it took a year, really, of dismantling all these layers of what you think you are, what you think you know. And it wasn't necessarily pleasant all the time either, because it's hard to be so honest with yourself to the point that the responsibility, because I thought I was responsible. I thought I was helping. I just wanted to help. But then when I realized what it was doing to people's psyche, I couldn't fathom continuing on doing what I was doing. And it just, even when I tried to explain it to other spiritual speakers, they're like, oh, you're just being negative and all these things. And it was also extremely frustrating as well. Now that I'm on the other side of it, now that I've done a significant amount of the dismantling, I understand the process a lot better. So when we start working with other people with the year commitment once a week, I can, you know, I know where they're at and I can help navigate them through it, you know. So in that way, it's beyond words.
Mm-hmm. So what would your, you know, if you originally talked about what would probably be your spiritual journey and, you know, going through and quote-unquote falling, you know, gurus and learning techniques and all that kind of stuff, you kind of got away from cleaning all that out, shedding all those layers and stuff like that. So, you know, as far as your own development or enlightenment, if you want to call it that, without even being, you know, prejudiced about that terminology, you know, what does your development look like in this new frame of this project?
So first of all, I actually never followed gurus or promoted techniques per se, or was into any techniques. I just wanted to share my story and to have people consider all possibilities. I was always very fascinated that truth is stranger than fiction and there are no limits, just beliefs, which was always been the slogan at the end of everything I shared. So now it's just being me. I mean, originally I was just me, and then what happened when I started to do these interviews was people started to put labels to me, like, and I tried to fight them at first, like Crystal Child in the interview. I'm like, no, that's just a term. That's not necessarily it, but everybody associated me with that, and, I mean, suddenly I was invited to all these countries as Crystal Child and so forth, so it was like, okay, fine, you want me to be a Crystal Child, I'll be a Crystal Child, but, I mean, to get let go of that label, all labels and all beliefs, and just be who we are. We weren't born with any beliefs. No animals have these beliefs, not building temples or praying or doing yoga or anything, and that is how I think we're meant to be, just totally a free mind, liberated, where we can live all that potential in peace.
So, yeah, so from your prospect, you know, or from your perspective, and you know, I didn't totally study exactly what you were labeled as before, but I don't know, maybe you were a psychic or you were labeled as being able to channel, and I've seen a lot of your videos where, you know, you give a lot of aspects of clearly kind of giving people things that will allow them to move into enlightenment or to move into information on their own. So I guess what I'm wondering is, what does that look like today now that you're kind of, you know, working with Diego and doing the EOF project? If I sign up for it, I mean, what is it like to interact with you in that new environment? Are you basically just holding space and just allowing me to unfold, or what does that new environment look like?
It basically is just us sharing and removing one layer at a time. I mean, you might ask a few questions or say, I'm struggling with this and that right now. And we basically help you understand what's really going on in the mind, changing a relationship to your fears and your problems so they're no longer your enemy, but your ally. You know, what happened when we were kids? We have imaginary friends, and as adults, we have imaginary enemies. So it creates a space for people to be able to really think profoundly again.
I wanted to share something, just a moment. Just a bit. About this word psychic, that to me is a bit ridiculous, but I have to say paradoxically that we are all psychic.
Yeah.
When we stop thinking that in some way, somehow, we are special, a wind of total freedom hits the mind, like boom, and we become like a bird. It doesn't care to be special. It cares just to be free and fly. If we are able to look at a flower or a tree or a human being without giving a name, a label, a scientific name, a romantic name, a spiritual name, a divine name, a transcendental name, then we are looking the flower. The thinker is the thought. The observer is what the observer is observing. The dreamer is the dream. The dreamer is the dream. The thinker becomes the flower together. And this is to be what it means to be all one. And this is what I conceive as psychic. We are all psychic without the label of psychic and the superpower.
Because when you fully become the flower, you certainly know what the flower knows, but it's without label, so it exists in the unknown, like the internet. We can't, know it all, but when we need to tap in on it, there it is. Kind of in that way. I mean, with people who work with us, they don't struggle so much psychologically. They're able to, again, damage prevention. They're able to see the pothole days or weeks in advance and steer themselves around it. They're not reacting anymore irrationally to their mind, freaking out from ghosts of the past, or they're able to see the ridiculousness going on in their mind and stop it before it becomes a big bomb.
We're actually getting ready to wrap up the show. It's amazing how quickly an hour goes. So I want to ask both of you a question. So I'll start with you, Jessica. You know, through this transformation and who you are today, what do you think is the biggest life lesson you'd like to share with everybody as far as what you've learned from this journey?
Wow. The biggest one is to be fully integral and honest with yourself to the point that you can see that – oh, it's so hard to explain. Just – understanding the mind, and I don't know how to answer this question.
The flower is the mind.
Yeah, like in the chapter I wrote. But, letting go of all the layers of all you think that you know so that you can actually be what you are, I guess.
Before I go to Diego and ask the same question, can you just kind of tell people where they can find out more about your work and how they can learn about the EOF project?
Yeah, we have Diego's website, theendofear.weebly.com, and jessicamystic.com, which I totally changed.
Oh, that's great. So I'll turn the question on you, Diego. I mean, you know, with the fact that you created the EOF project and everything, and you know, what do you think, you know, through – well, let me just take a step back just for a minute because we're running out of time. You know, Diego, did you come from a foundation of following gurus at one time in your life and you kind of manifested into this EOF project and this new understanding, or have you always been in this clear sight?
No. I never. I have to say that I had a kind of normal life. I mean, nothing really particular happened in my life. And I have to say that I do not even read the books, actually. I wrote a few books, but I never read my books. If you open my book and you ask me, what is this about? I said, well, I don't know.
He never followed anybody.
I never followed anybody. Including my parents. I have to be honest. My parents are basic minds, simple minds. What my parents tried to teach me was merely how to judge and nothing else. And I'm not coming from a sectarian environment or some weird stuff of religious thinking or whatever it is. But I've been always myself in terms of the self is the totality of the mind, and not just the intellectual mind. The self is the intellect, the self is the memory, the self is the perception, the self is the visionariness, and even our natural schizophrenia, when it's not out of balance. This is the self, all the parts of the mind coexisting and co-working together. And this is what I would like to imagine the future generation, not by making mantras and hoping for an ascension that will never come, but finding out for themselves with no conditioning at all, together, in community, in society, with a mind totally free, like the bird, but with intelligence in evolution. This is what I would like, the way I would like to see the future, the next generation, free, not following this and that information, achieving new spiritual information, new postures of the body, new belief, new labels. I mean, to say it shortly, I have to say that I came across a lot of spiritual preachers in my life, a lot, and I'm sorry. I have to say that all of them were confused, including a guy that obviously, I don't want to say the name, which is a very important yoga teacher and spiritual preacher in the world, as well as he considers himself a healer, and he's doing workshops all over the world. Okay, fine, this guy tried to kill himself 10 times. And if I ask him now, he's still thinking about that, he say yes, he's totally messed up, and he's supposed to be a healer. Okay, it is just a case. Perhaps over there are some spiritual preachers that are not so confused. But it seems to me that in some way, somehow, all the spiritual searching implies confusion because it comes from confusion, and therefore is merely an escape.
You can never find when you're searching.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for both of you being on the show, both to you, Jessica, and also to you, Diego. It's going to be great for people to go and take a look at your website. As always, Pam, thank you for bringing in some ideas and everything.
Thank you.
And
thank you both.
And I think your English sounds pretty good, Diego. So.
Okay.
All right. Well, I appreciate both of your time today. And for everybody who tuned in, you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. And we're on the internet at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And I want to say goodnight to everybody. Thank you, Diego. Thank you, Jessica. And always thank you, Pam.
Good night. Thank you.
Life is but a dream.